You are listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. It's April and this is the Cycling Podcast Femina. I'm with Rose Manley.
Hello.
And Orla Shinaway.
Hello, hello.
How are you both?
Good. I'm glad you said it was April. I've no idea what month it is, what day it is, what week it is. So I'm glad you've put me in a space, in a time. Oh my, see? I can't even speak.
what do they call it? Grounding, don't they? Grounding.
Yeah,
you think of
yeah.
Five things that you've seen today, four things that you heard, three things that you smelt, two things that you something, and it's called grounding.
Oh, Rose, right. I think Orla's way off the back, and you and I are going to have to be really good domestics bringing her back up. I'll be Tim de Klerk.
How many seconds in are we?
I've only said about 10 words.
Yeah, but they were all in the wrong order, Orla.
Listen. 24/7 caring for two children ain't as easy as you might think. Mashes your mind.
Yeah. No, well, you know, here we are. We're in a safe space here. No kids.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about cycling for a bit. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of cycling, but we have actually got quite a lot to talk about. And we've got quite a few interviews in this episode, including with Elise Chabé, who is a Bigla Katusha rider, who just finished her medical studies last October and has gone back to working in a hospital to respond to the coronavirus crisis. She was asked to go back, so she did. So, you know, we'll hear from her. It's really fascinating to hear how she's juggling her very important work with training still as well. Who else will we hear from? We're going to hear from Louis Delahaye, the coach to Annemiek van Vleuten and Marianne Vos. It's going to be a two-parter, actually. We'll hear a bit from him this month and then another bit next month. Orla, you look like you're going to come in there.
I was going to say we were going to hear from Jip van den Bos as well. I was just going to add to our list of what we have coming up. She was out on a road.
Yes, you've done a couple of interviews as well, Rose.
Yes, I spoke to Molly Weaver about the Dirty Weaver, which is an event that she's made entirely herself.
I really wish that people listening could have seen your face at the same time as you did that voice. That was a real Dirty Weaver with a lip curl and everything. You bit real gusto into it.
Maybe there is a job going. I don't know. Molly, let me know if there's a job going as head of promotions.
Yeah.
I'll take anything right now.
Can you tell us what the Dirty Weaver is, please, Rose?
I think we should
just wait.
You know,
it sounds
wait
fun
and
enough.
Wait and find
get
out at the end.
Okay,
sorry.
You haven't got anything else to do, have you?
So you've nowhere else to be. You might as well just hang on in there and wait to find out.
I'm giving away all my surprises.
Well, we'll hear all that. But before that, before we get into the news roundup as well, Orla, which might bring us down a little bit, how are you both doing? Generally, apart, obviously challenges, or a lot of there are challenges in looking after two young kids. But generally speaking, what are the best things? What have been the best things about being in this lockdown situation?
Actually, for me, best things have been hanging out with the kids. You know, it's the hard bit, but it's also been mostly it's been a lot of fun. And because I have to always go away when I'm working, like with you two, you have to spend so much time away from the kids. And I've actually been really conscious of looking back on this bubble as a bubble from the outside, from when it's done, and being aware that I'll probably look back on it quite nostalgically. And all this really intense time that you get to have with the kids is actually also the best bit. So I'm mostly loving that side of it, really.
Rose?
I enjoy not having to put makeup on in the morning, though I have made an
Same
effort
here.
Today to see your faces. I can see you've gone for a really bold red lip.
I was going to say, I don't think that lip colour suits you, though.
Oh.
Really?
Sorry.
Mm. The
eyes are good.
The kind of
the
vampy look.
Yeah. I quite like the cool eyeliner.
That's the aubergine curry that I made earlier today, just before we started this call.
You just face dived into it, did you? Most people use knives and forks, Richard. But I guess anything goes in lockdown.
At the moment, none of that matters. Mm. I can eat with my hands as much as I like. Yeah.
What have you been enjoying most?
Eating with my hands and not bothering with makeup or clothes. I'm wearing clothes now.
Can I just say that Richard is fully clothed, and we know this even though we're all seeing each other remotely, but we've inspected him down to his socks actually already. So he's wearing matching socks, very sensible slippers, shirt and trousers. You've actually made quite an effort.
Yeah, thanks. I'm actually healthier than I would be normally because probably eating better.
I'm eating better.
I'm certainly doing more exercise because it's. There's less things to do that other than exercise, so I'm finding more time.
Yeah,
for exercise,
traveling means eating in restaurants and not always eating well. And we've not been traveling, and we do travel a lot. And I've got my turbo trainer here in my office, and I've been riding that most days, and really enjoying that. Really enjoying feeling slightly fitter and watching a lot of. Great stuff. You know, I've been talking about this in the regular podcast, but I've been watching the behind the scenes Tour of Flanders documentaries, which are absolutely brilliant. And you know, various other things on Netflix. So on old races, that's been good fun.
Keeping busy then, Richard.
Yeah, busy.
You're living the boy dream here on your turbo trainer. Well,
in his man cave.
Yeah, watching old races on the TV. So you remember how I said that hanging out with the kids is one of the best bits? Sounds like child avoidance.
No, I've been hanging out with our little 3-year-old a lot as well. Been doing treasure hunts and obstacle courses. And
I've seen the obstacle courses. They're impressive.
Building tents in the garden. Yeah, it's been good fun. But we should get on with the news roundup. Orla, can we get some of your cycling news to lift us up?
Well, it's not going to lift us, I'm afraid. I apologise in advance. There hasn't been a great deal of good news right now because the racing is what provides us with the good news, isn't it? And the excitement. But we want to keep you across what's happening anyway. So I'll make this brief so you don't get you too down. We do have plenty of good things to talk about later anyway. But racing has been suspended until the 1st of June as of date of recording. Of course, the women's tour was supposed to take place a week later than that. That's already been postponed. So we can't be certain when racing will indeed resume. And that has meant uncertainty for teams and sponsorship across the board. Ronnie Lauka, the president of the newly launched Teams Union, has warned that teams probably will disappear in this crisis and others will end up reduced in size because of businesses struggling, sponsorship funding being cut, jobs being lost. So we know Mitchelton Scott, they confirmed their riders have taken a wage cut in the women's as well as the men's team. Lotto Soudal have had to do the same. You've been chatting, Richard, to Ashley Milman-Passio about something else, or for something else rather, but I know you're going to give us an update as to what she had said about the situation at CCC Live. Because of the men's team there announced that they had suspended the majority of their support staff contracts and all rider salaries would be heavily reduced for the remainder of the season. But they're under separate management structures, aren't they? So I think you're going to give us an update on that. And incidentally, one thing that did tickle me slightly was that Milman-Passio, clearly in flying form, because despite the lack of racing or indeed outdoor training, she became the second rider in a week to be pulled from Zwift for posting numbers that were considered too high. It was simply not human to be putting in the numbers that she was doing. So I find that very amusing. One team who have said that their sponsorship won't be affected is a UK-based outfit, Cam Stefosi. They have released a statement saying that their 3-year deal still stands as it was. So that is good news. And finally, the UCI Ethics Commission has delayed its decision in the abuse case involving the manager of Healthmate CycleLive, Patrick Van Hansen, and that's because of new allegations. We've had an anonymous rider apparently from the team who has filed another formal complaint with the UCI Ethics Commission. They've alleged violence and inappropriate behaviour, and she also claims to have witnessed inappropriate behaviour towards her former teammate Esther Meisels, who was one of the 3 women to have filed similar complaints in May of last year. So still awaiting the outcome of that very serious case. And that, as far as I could see, lady and gentlemen, is our news roundup.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns and scaling new heights with iWalker. If you run a business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. That's iwoca.co.uk.
So I'm Flora Knight, I'm 17, I ride for Team 22 on the road. Yeah, and Kendall Cycle Club too. So some of the results I'm most proud of, I came third in the National Youth Series in 2018. That was the first ever national race I did, so I was quite proud of that. I won my first ever senior race that I did last season, and I've had several other podium finishes as well that I'm proud of in regional races. So I started racing in 2016 for Kendall Cycle Club. That was just when I got into cycling, yeah. So they were definitely very supportive. I think one of the main things was the club rides every weekend, getting to ride with more experienced riders who had, yeah, a lot of knowledge about things that I wasn't sure about yet. That was definitely very useful. And seeing all the support on the Facebook pages and stuff after I'd done races, they were all very kind and supportive of me. That definitely helped keep me motivated.
Thank you very much indeed to our title sponsor, iWalker, whose support helps ensure that we can carry on as normal at the moment. They also sponsor the Kendall Cycle Club. We heard from one of their young members, Flora, there. They've got a big women's contingent. I know Kendall Cycle Club are very grateful for the support, as are we. iWalker remains 100% focused on their mission to provide customers with the finance they need to bridge cash flow gaps and make investments. So thank you very much, iWalker. And well, in the first part of today's podcast, we're going to return to a story that we talked about a little bit last month. You spoke, Orla, about some of the Dutch riders who'd taken themselves off backpacking. I think they had in mind a big adventure. It didn't quite turn out like that, did it?
It didn't quite because, well, I was going to say because of the lockdown, but we're in an odd situation, I think, here in the Netherlands compared to certainly the UK anyway, and most of Europe. It's fairly lax here. So we are still allowed and indeed encouraged lots of people out riding their bikes every day. Here, the riders can still go out and train on the roads. But as you say, Yip and a few others on the team had decided that they were going to use the time when the races were cancelled to go off and do this bike packing tour. But the reason they cut it short was as much because they felt it was no longer in the spirit of what we're all being encouraged to do. And they didn't think they should be going off and enjoying this wonderful adventure when we're being told we shouldn't be travelling too much. But yeah, so they decided that they were going to have a different way to train. Their races were cancelled. They wanted to have a little bit of fun and keep it interesting. And so they decided to head off and do a bike packing tour with a bit of a difference. So I was asking Yip about that and what else she's been up to. So here she is.
We were actually already in Drenthe for the World Tour race in Drenthe. We did a reckon that the day before, and then Thursday, I think, yeah, everything was just cancelled. First, all the Belgian races were cancelled, and then in the evening, the Dutch races were cancelled, so we had to head home because, like, we were there, but we couldn't race anymore. At that point, like, we didn't really know, like, how bad the situation was. We just said, like, okay, the coming 3 weeks, we will not race, but after, probably everything will continue. So I was riding back home in the car with Amy that evening, and we were discussing how we could, like, prepare ourselves for the races that were still on the calendar after the 3 weeks without riding the races which were cancelled. We said, like, okay, we just have to do, like, we start with some endurance, probably. So make it fun. Like, we have to visit people, like, make long rides and go to people. And then we thought, like, yeah, it's nice to do it. Like, we just do it on a bike and we go from one person to the other person to the other person. And it makes it, like, more fun to do it together. Then Amy and I came up with the idea, and Sunday, so 2 days after, we left. And we first rode to Anna van der Breggen. We met her on the way so she could ride with us back home to her house. And the day after, she rode again for a while with us. And we had to Jan-Willem van het Schip and Taco van der Hoorn. Taco is a road rider for Lotto Jumbo, and Jan-Willem is a track rider. Then we stayed there. But actually, like, every day, the situation changed a bit. Like, we learned more about it because there was like a press conference from the Dutch government and all the rules changed. So after the first day already, all the coffee places and lunch places were closed. Yeah, also like at some point we felt like, is it right what we are doing actually? Mm. Because the rules were like getting, they're getting more and more rules. And actually they also said like, don't visit people anymore. And we were staying at people's house. So like also because we put everything on social media, it's maybe not a good idea. And also for just like to listen to the rules, we maybe have to go back home. So then we went back home after 2 days actually already, which was like sad, but like better for everything.
So how far did you get in 2 days then? Did you, and how many days did you plan to stay away for? How much equipment did you have with you? How much supplies did you have with you?
Yeah, actually, we didn't really plan for how long. We just said, like, for as long as possible. Or as possible, like, as long as we think it's fun. Because we can, like, call people on the way for, like, can we stay at your place tomorrow? And I think for at least, like, 4 nights we were thinking. But in the end, like, it were only 2 nights. And we slept at people's place for 2 nights. But, it like, we didn't have to bring more stuff for more nights. Because we could eat it at somebody's place. We had a bed at the other at somebody's place. So we just brought, like, jogging pants and the cycling clothes we could wash at their places. Yeah, actually we could have stayed away for very long.
It sounds really good fun. Do you think you would do it again whenever times are a bit freer and the roads are a bit more open?
Yeah. I love bikepacking. In November I did it for the first time with Anna in California, and then directly we were like overwhelmed with how cool it was. So it was, again, really, really nice. And I would definitely do it again. But, the situation is just not good for it right now.
So how has the whole period been for you since you got back then? What's it been like this? I mean, in Holland at the minute, I guess we've got, it's less restricted than it is in other countries, really. It's not quite as strict in terms of how much we can go out. But obviously, everyone has to be responsible and going out in small groups. How have you found this period of not racing and trying to keep your training up?
It's mentally pretty hard, actually, because you're so ready. Like, you've been training for months in winter and you feel ready. You want to show you are. And then it's just not possible anymore. And on the other side, like, this is more important than bike racing in the end. Like, the whole world is, like, suffering from this. And cycling is just, it's just, in the end, just cycling. But for yourself, it's hard to think like that because it's so important for yourself. Yeah, you have to make a big switch in your head. So I actually needed, like, I'm still struggling a bit with it because to train really good, I think you have to be, like, really motivated. Mm-hmm. And to be really motivated, it has to be the most important thing in your life. Mm. And yeah, right now, there is other things which are maybe more important. That makes really precise training pretty hard, I think. Like, on the other side, like, riding a bike is still, like, my biggest hobby. So that's not a problem. But, like, training really well, it's pretty, I think it's quite a mental struggle right now. It's so hard because you don't know where you're training for. Like, if you don't have a proper goal, it's also hard to make a real plan because you don't know when you have to be ready and if there is going to be a season or if there is not a season at all this year. So you have to make training a bit fun for yourself, I think, and find ways how you can motivate yourself. And like, if you like to go train on your mountain bike right now, like, then I go on my mountain bike normally in this period of this period of the year. You're really precise with your training because there's races where you like need to do your specific sprints for things. So that's really different right now.
So is that important to get through all of this, try to have some fun with it as well? Because I guess the fun is a bit of a distraction from both the enormity of what's going on around us and also the difficulty of being uncertain as to where your season's going to go, if the season's going to go. So are you, when you talk about mountain biking, is having fun then a big part of trying to deal with it all mentally?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think you don't have to be too hard for yourself. But I you have to train, of course. Like, it's our work and you have to be fit and you want to be fit and you want to be ready when racing will start. I do think it makes it easier when you find, like, you can train really well by doing things which are also fun. It's not that you train less good, I think. Yeah, by finding ways, I might even think that you train better when you find when you train in ways that which are fun, because then it's just like it's just not a struggle or something, you know. You just have to work on your strength and your endurance. So that's what I'm doing now. So as long as we don't know any date, that's just what I do. And I think what most cyclists do.
And apart from maybe mountain biking, what other things are you doing to keep yourself entertained right now? We're all being encouraged to stay at home. Have you rediscovered a love of board games or card games, or what are you doing to keep yourself entertained?
Yeah, we're playing games, but we're also like painting walls, and we're cleaning our closets, and we're cooking and baking, and I'm still training, so that's also a big part of my day.
Back to the simple things in life, then, I guess. The basics.
Yeah. It's weird because I think you get pretty creative actually from a period like this. There's so much more time around right now to do other things that you get really creative in finding ways to have fun or filling your time with. Yeah, for example, like we've been, we're together with my housemate, we've been painting cards and like because we want to support the local farmers, there's a lot of flowers around here. We bought a lot of flowers and we painted the cards ourselves and we gave them to all our neighbors just to like to give everybody a bit of like love and also to support the farmers. Yeah, so you're gonna do things like that.
So that was Jip van den Bos. I really loved that idea of the bike packing tour. It was a bit of a difference, wasn't it? Going to different riders' homes, staying there for the night, bringing them with them on the next leg of the tour. And she said she'll go back and do it again, I guess, whether or not the calendar will allow them to do it and take some time off and have some fun, I don't know. But it does feel like it's slightly easier, at least for the Dutch and the Belgian riders, because they are allowed to train outside. So it's not quite as dire as it is for the rest of Europe, where, you know, all the training is done in the home trainer. But it was interesting to hear, you know, how Jip is having to mix things up a little bit and keep herself interested, because it's not even just how you're training, but it's what you're training for, you know. It's not having that focus. It's not having the next race in mind. So she's been mixing it up, you know, with different kinds of riding and whatnot, which sounds like a sensible way to do it. But like I say, they've got the privileged position here of being able to get out in the road, which isn't the case for most riders at the moment.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it, when racing does resume and some riders have been able to train outside and others have been confined to apartments and so on. And there's a sort, you mentioned there the sense that they had that it wasn't the right thing to do to take off on their adventure, and one or two other riders as well, I think, even if they're allowed to do it, felt a kind of stigma and certainly a comment coming from elsewhere in Europe that it's wrong to go out and do sort of 200 kilometer rides, certainly. So, and they can't do group rides, of course.
It's hard that, though, I think. They can't do group rides and you're not allowed out with more than two people at a time. But I find it hard that, because you can only really go on the advice of your own government, you know. And I think because we're so international and so connected these days, it's easy for people to cast aspersions or for people to feel guilty. But at the same time, I mean, tentatively, touch wood, the measures here at least seem to be working. But that's because every country is made up of a different culture, you know, with people who manage themselves in different ways. And so the Dutch people do not like being told what to do. And so for them, they will socially distance. That's fine. But it wouldn't work for them to be told absolute lockdown, for example. They're quite an autonomous people, whereas other countries maybe need that more. I think it's a bit unfair on the riders who are allowed out on the road. I mean, I guess they can do it anyway, you know, they don't need to post it on social media, they don't need to share that. But it will be really interesting, I think, whenever we come out of this and see how everyone has managed, you know, and how the different approaches have worked. But I think there's a lot of kudos to be had now in online racing anyway, in online training. So I guess a lot of the riders who are probably allowed out in the road are maybe sticking in extra Zwift sessions anyway, because that's what everybody's doing, you know, and it's another way of staying connected and relevant and getting sponsors out there in some way.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned earlier that I'd spoken to Ashley Mulman Passio, and she lives in a lovely sort of sprawling place just outside Banyuls in near Girona in Spain. Not a bad place to be in isolation, but she's obviously been on the indoor trainer, And riders like her, who are essentially climbers, she was talking about, you know, that she likes a high cadence, she likes to get out of the saddle a lot. And riders like that struggle more, I think, with the indoor trainer, whereas bigger kind of time trialists are used to the monotonous performance and the, you know, maybe staying in one position for a long time and all that kind of stuff. They deal with it a bit better. But she's really taken to it and really embraced it. You mentioned she'd been flagged on Zwift for paranormal performances, but she's really enjoying it and actually seeing it as an opportunity to work on some of her weaknesses. Just briefly as well, and you mentioned the team situation with her. She rides for CCC, and as you say, there's a separate management group to the men's team, although they have the same title sponsor. And she thinks that their team will be, well, it's okay at the moment, and she thinks generally women's teams may hold up better than men's teams, because men's teams are so dependent on, and indeed the contracts can stipulate, a certain amount of TV exposure, which women's teams don't seem to have. Women's teams also have much smaller budgets, of course. So it could be that there are more men's teams that go under during this period than women's teams. Who knows?
Yeah, I guess it's the only fear is if, you know, the women's side, and you know, I'm not at all saying this is the case, but if the women's side of the men's teams with the women's side adjoining are kind of seen as an easy way to save, you know, a few million by, you know, getting rid of it. I guess that's the only fear. But you know, it's good to see. I'm not particularly a fan of online racing myself, but you know, it's an important outlet to get the sponsors out there and to keep keep cycling fans with something to watch, something to enjoy.
You know, I guess it's interesting when the model, the most recent model, has been hailed as the way forward, whereby men's teams have women's teams on the side. I guess this all exposes the vulnerability of that, really, because the women's teams, which are standalone, do have a smaller budget and they are independent and self-sufficient, really, to a large extent. Whereas if you've got a women's team that's joined to a men's team, they have to be lumped together, really. So if you're going to cut the men's salary, you have to cut the women's salary. So in a way, I think where in normal world, pre all of this, we would have thought that the men's team and the big sponsor behind it made it more financially stable. Actually, now it makes it a little bit more vulnerable.
Yeah, back on the subject of training and how riders are coping as well with this, I spoke to Louis Delahaye, the longtime coach of what is now the Jumbo-Visma team, and he began working with Annemiek van Vleuten in 2014 and has coached her all through her kind of evolution into the rider that she is now. We'll hear the bulk of that interview next month, actually, where he talks about working with Annemiek van Vleuten and how that has developed and about her particular training, because it's quite unusual that in terms of volume and some of the training that she does. But about, well, just over a year ago, she began working with Marina Voss as well, and I was curious to know how that had come about and whether that created any conflict with Annemiek van Vleuten, because they're clearly rivals and on different teams. We'll hear him first talking about the hookup with Marina Voss and how that came about, and it was surprised me to hear the circumstances behind that. And then we'll hear a little bit about what he thinks about this lockdown and how riders are coping with it.
Annemiek played a very important role in the cooperation between Marianne and myself. I mean, Marianne hit the wall a few times, especially in 2015. That's well known.
Yeah.
And she tried to come back, but every time, I mean, not like in 2050, but you hit the wall again. And Annemiek told her, hey, go talk with Louis. Maybe he can help you. And she did that. And it was, I mean, it was a privilege and an honor to work with somebody who from this class. I mean, she's the best ever. But it was easy to work with her. If she would make her own training program, she would be very, very, very successful. And what she needed is just somebody who once in a while say, hey, take your time off, or who has an idea of planning a little bit more on the long term.
That's interesting that I was going to ask about how it worked with working with Annemiek and Marianne, because they're rivals, of course, they're on different teams. And we have a perception sometimes that there's a lot of rivalry within the Dutch team and the Dutch women's team in particular. So that's interesting.
Well, I can only talk for Marianne and Annemiek, they're friends.
Mm. So there's
was really happy for Annemiek when she became world champion. And the other way around, if Marianne wins, Annemiek is happy. So yeah, I think they deal with this situation very well. And maybe even in 2019, they were the two best cyclists in the world.
Well, I mean, Marianne Vos had a great year last year. You must have been very satisfied watching her.
Very happy. I was especially happy for Marianne that they could see that she really enjoyed racing again. Mm. I mean, she likes racing the race, you know, the tactics and, you know, playing almost. And this playfulness, that was absolutely back because she was able to do it. She was prepared for it, but she had some kind of freshness maybe that was lacking for a few years. And yeah, that was nice to see when you see somebody enjoying what she's doing. That's nice to see also as a coach. The main problem in the moment is in Holland. I mean, we have lockdown, but we are allowed to go outside for sports. And the main problem is that there is not a goal. And normally you work towards a goal. That can be the Giro d'Italia or the World Championships or this year the Olympics. So you know what you are riding for. So it actually now it's about, do you like cycling? Do you like cycling a lot? So this goal is gone. So you try to find new goals. And the way I try to look at it is, okay, we started 2 weeks ago. We're now in the third week. And we say, okay, we're not going to talk about goals, whatever, for 1 month. It will be 3 weeks of training. And next week will be a week with recovery, like we normally do. Week 1, 2, 3, volume. Week 3, volume down, easy week. And then we see what happens and how long lockdown is going to last, etc. And like I see it is from yes, we have a training schedule, but it's very flexible. If you want to change days based on the weather, whatever, you change things. Be flexible in your program. And I see it more like you had a rest period at the end of the year, and then you start training again. Let's say the content of this period is like that, only it's with a flying start. We don't have to start with 8 or 10 hours a week. We can do normal training more or less because, yeah, we came from a very good situation. We didn't have rest. So not too much intensity, nice rides, also use the mountain bike, or in Marianne's case, she was on a cyclocross bike. Yeah, do things you normally never do. And what you see now, and I can see that with Marianne and with Annemiek, but also with the triathletes, they're dealing very well with the situation. Triathletes today are riding a 200-kilometer ride, not because it's good to do that, but just they say, I won once in my life, I want to do 200 kilometers on the bike. They never do that because, yeah, there is no time for it in the triathlon season. Now there is time, okay, nice challenge. That's the goal, not that race. We don't know if it's even gonna be there or not.
Is the mental aspect just as much of a challenge?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's more a mental than a physical aspect. I mean, if the riders can train, let's say, 20 hours a week now for a longer period of time, as long as this lasts, at the moment we know there is going to be a race. We only need 4 weeks to be in the top shape because their base is excellent. Because they do 20 hours a week on the bike, even if they don't do sprints or efforts or whatever, just be on the bike. And if you go off the bike for 4 weeks, yeah, okay, then you get detrained. Your level goes down quite rapidly and you need a long time to get back to that level. And then you need more than 4 weeks.
It sounds like, you know, most of your riders are quite lucky that they can train outside at the moment. What about riders?
Yeah,
who...
but for example, like Robert Gasing, he lives in Andorra. He is training on his ducks, on his balcony. He is not allowed to go outside, but also he makes the best of the situation. But he is not making 30 hours a week, but maybe like 20. Which
Although
keeps
he's doing quite a big volume, isn't he, as well on his trainer?
Yeah.
How much of a problem is that in a physical sense? How good a substitute is the indoor trainer for riding on the road?
Yeah, I think it's a very boring but effective way of training. So I think it's a good training. If you can deal with it psychologically, then even if you have to train on your balcony, and Robert is dealing very well with it, and once in a while you do like a swift race or whatever, I think he is still fresh and making the best out of the situation.
And how are Annemiek and Marianne dealing with it? Are they just quite sort of accepting of the situation and waiting patiently?
Oh yeah,
patiently?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Both of them are accepting the situation. Yeah.
And looking ahead in both their cases, maybe, but it's particularly Annemiek, to Tokyo in 2021 now.
The question is not what can't we do, but what can we do? Now, we can go outside. The weather is nice. We can do different things. You can train skills. Maybe you think, hey, I want to even get used even better than I'm still now. I'm more comfortable on my time trial bike. Okay, go on the time trial bike. So it's all small goals they set themselves, or learn new things on a cycle course bike, which Mariana is doing now. They both accepted that there will not be races, but they both like cycling. So it's nice to go outside on your bike. Mm. And that's where it all starts.
And I guess what makes great athletes is they're quite good at making the best of a situation as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All world-class athletes are very resilient. I think that is a trait they all have. Otherwise, you wouldn't be the best, because there is no straight path to the top. Well, and from the best, we know that, because yeah, it's written down in every magazine. Yeah, but everybody has that. So there are crashes, you get sick, disappointment, etc., etc. And I think the ones we're dealing the best with this, also with the Corona situation, in the end, they will be successful.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Do you fancy a little pick-me-up?
Yes!
Who doesn't? Woo-woo!
We all deserve one at the moment. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service for men and women, where an expert stylist picks clothes just for you based on your taste, size, and price preferences, and sends them straight to your door. Perfect if you want to discover something new, or if you don't like clothes shopping, or you want to look as great as Rose in her Stitch Fix outfit.
Woo-woo!
That doesn't really work in audio. Yeah. Rose
is doing a little silent dance, which is beautiful to look at.
Hypnotic.
But I feel like, just imagine, I feel like we need commentary.
Traditional clothes shopping isn't an option for any of us at the moment, but Stitch Fix are here to help you treat yourself without needing to leave the house. Stitch Fix personal stylists, who all work safely from home, are ready to select you 5 surprise items to hopefully put a smile on your face when we all need it the most. It's easy and actually really fun. You go to their website, complete a style profile about your clothing preferences, shapes, sizes, and what you like to wear. Then it's over to your stylist, who'll hand select and send to you 5 items of clothing and accessories, which you discover when they arrive at your front door, along with a nice card including outfit inspiration and style tips. Try everything on, keep and pay for what you like, send back the rest. Delivery and returns are free, and includes an option free home courier pickup, particularly ideal at the moment. Stitch Fix have also extended their try-on window from 1 week to 6 weeks, so you've got extra time to send everything back, which again is pretty handy at the moment. The best bit is that you pay just £10 for your stylist time, which is redeemable against anything that you keep. If you fancy giving yourself a treat at the moment, then go grab a cuppa, maybe a cheeky biscuit, and get
or
started
five,
with Stitch Fix.
Or
a pie.
Usually. No, five, not a pie. 5 biscuits.
Okay.
Biscuits,
go to Stitch Fix. Go to stitchfix.co.uk/cycling right now. That's stitchfix.co.uk/cycling. Now, we heard from Louis Delahaye in the last part, talking about how he came to work with Marna Vos. He was introduced, well, it seems that Annemiek van Vleuten introduced them. They knew each other anyway, but she recommended that Vos begin working with Delahaye, which is interesting, I thought, and certainly had great results last year, because Vos was back to near her best. You know, that was the best we've seen of Vos for some years, so clearly that relationship is working well. And I thought it was interesting as well, talking about how the riders are dealing with the lockdown and managing their training. And he said what you said earlier, Orla, that the biggest problem they all have is that they don't really know what they're training for at the moment.
I thought it was also interesting what he said about doing it for the love of cycling, which I think really ties into what Jip van der Bos was trying to do. And I'm sure that would have, you know, come across to you all, about having, not being able to just cycle because you want to win something, or you want to help your teammate to win something, but just cycling because you love it and you enjoy it. And I think that's something remarkable, and something that we should, you know, hold on to in uncertain times.
Yeah, it's a good, well, I think it's a good point. I think that, speaking again to Ashley yesterday, she was talking about the craving to ride outside again. And if nothing else, I think everybody's realizing what it is they really do enjoy. And professional bike riders, some of them maybe who are caught up in the routine of training and racing, are probably realizing afresh now just how much they love being outside riding their bikes.
Can you imagine how excited everyone is going to be when we're back racing again? You know what I mean? Like, when you think of how everybody just, much as anyone loves the sport, there is a routine to all of it, and everyone plods along because one season resembles another. You know, we've got the same races, the same feel every year, and you can't help but take all of that for granted because you know with certainty when a race is going to be run, you know what the character and the feel of that race is going to be. What you don't know, you know, things like the weather and who's going to win and whatnot. But suddenly all of that's going to feel fresh, and I don't know, I think there's going to be a new gratitude from everybody just being able to get out riding again and racing and watching racing. And I mean, I think it's going to be quite marvellous, really. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how excited even Richard is going to be?
No, come on. Miracles
there
don't
could
happen
even
like
be a
that.
Spring in my step.
Wow, yeah, I know, I think be, there will yeah. be. I think there will be a little skip.
Full of the joys.
Yeah.
Might even break a smile, Orla.
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, don't push it.
I think it'll be rather a lovely thing though, won't it? It makes us all realise what we enjoy and why we enjoy it, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I imagine it'll be, it's not going to just sort of one day be back to normal. There'll be a transition, won't there, where we're probably still all keeping our distance. So we'll, you know, remain within 6 feet of each other, Orla, and kind of wave. I don't know. What will we do? Just
goodbye.
Well, you can still talk.
You can make this a new habit that you just bow to us. I mean, I'm
you
not
can
against
curtsy,
that.
I can bow. How's that?
If you think about how loud Orla's voice is and what an advantage that will be in social distancing,
absolutely,
it's remarkable.
I think I'd be in favour of a four or 5 meters with Orla, actually.
Do you know, these kinds of crises, though, always bring new unthought about talents to the fore. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and there's always a survival in a weird way that you didn't appreciate before. So it's the most adaptable and most flexible, whatever it might be. And so it could be now that we of the louder voices will begin to rule the world. And wouldn't that be a wonderful thing?
I'm just picturing a zombie apocalypse movie right now, and Orla saving the day at the end because her voice is so booming.
Well, no one will be able to hear the whisperers who before were considered to be very polite and delicate and rather sweet. Now they'll be lost, you know? They'll be lost 2 meters away.
Won't get their opinions, what they want in their world, heard.
Yeah,
and then
yeah, who cares? We won't hear them. Yeah, only the loudest will survive. You heard it here first.
There was a good point. There was a good point in there somewhere.
There wasn't, Richard. I'm not going to pretend that one. There wasn't.
Well, let's hear from somebody who is very involved in fighting the coronavirus crisis, Elise Chabé, who rides for Bigla Katusha. This was her really first year full-time as a full-time cyclist, in the sense that she was always combining her racing in the past with her medical studies, and she finished them towards the end of last year. So this year was all about the Olympic Games and the World Championships, and obviously being a full-time pro. Being a medic, she was called to work in her local hospital in Geneva a few weeks ago, and she's been doing long shifts there and also trying to keep fit and ready for returning to racing at some point as well. So caught up with her the other day. Here's what she has to say.
I only started cycling like 2 or 3 years ago, so it's pretty new for me. But the last 3 years I trained and studied at the same time. Before that I was doing some kayak, but that was a long time ago. That was before medicine.
But finishing your studies, you must have thought, you know, that this would be a great opportunity for you to really focus 100% on your sport and make the most of what is a big year this year.
Yeah, it was really a relief when I finished my study, because last year was really hard. I had to go to the hospital and go back at home, train, go to training camp, go to the races, and yeah, it was really a hard season for me. And then I was really happy to finish with it, and I was really motivated to train hard and like only focus on cycling this season. But yeah, it didn't happen like this. But
what were your big goals this year? Was it the Olympic Games, World Championships?
I think my first big goal was the Worlds, because it's in Switzerland, and I think I'm really lucky because I'm only cycling for 3 years and I already have the World at home. So yeah, it was my big goal, but we'll see if it happens.
Describe what happened the last few weeks. You started your season already down in Spain. You know, at what point did you realize that the situation with coronavirus was becoming serious?
Yeah, so we started the season in Spain and everything was going well with the team. The team is amazing and all the girls are really nice and it was really perfect. And I was in a good shape. And then we had to go to Strade Bianche for the race in Italy. And when we were going there, we heard that the race was cancelled, so we had to go back. And at this moment, I was frustrated because I didn't think it was something like important. I was like, it's nothing and we can still race. And yeah, I was a bit angry. But then when I went back in Switzerland, and after 2 or 3 days, I knew that at the hospital it was like really bad. Like all the doctors were stressed and they really needed some people to help there. So then I knew it was important, yeah.
And how did it come about that you went back to work there? Was that, did you get in touch with them or did they get in touch with you?
Yeah, one of the chief was my teacher last year, and he knew that that I was cycling at the moment, and he called me to take some news about me, and he told me that they really need some people at the hospital, and if I didn't know what to do, I could just come like for 2 weeks and do something there. And first I didn't want to, because I was really focused on cycling and I really wanted to keep training and hard, and I didn't want to work. But then I talked with my coach and we talked together, and he said that maybe it's nice to do something, because the day is really long when you don't know for what you train and you don't know when is your next race. So I called back the doctor and I told him that I'm interested to do this. So then he told me, okay, it's nice, and you want to start tomorrow? Then I was like, okay. I was surprised that he asked me already to start the day after, but yeah, then I did it and I'm happy with my choice now.
How has it been doing that work, and what has your work entailed?
So I'm in general medicine, but now all the hospital in Geneva is COVID, so it's with the virus. So I can have like 9 patients at the same time. But at the moment, like we are a lot of doctors and everything is under control, I think. And yeah, I think it's good.
And are you worried at all about the danger? Because it's a big subject here in the UK that the doctors and the nurses are in great danger because they don't maybe have the right protective clothing. Do you have good protective clothing for your work?
Yeah, I think we are well protected. We have like everything. We have the mask and the gloves and everything. And I think I'm pretty young and I'm in good health, so I'm not afraid for me. I'm a bit afraid for my family, but I don't see them now, so I think it's okay. And yeah, I have the feeling I'm really helpful there.
I guess you're, given the work that you're doing, you're living in isolation at the moment.
I live with my sister, but she's also working at the hospital, so
okay.
I think it's okay. Yeah. And then I have somebody to talk in the evening. It's nice.
And what sort of hours are you working?
They told me that I can work as long as I want. So I have a special contract. I can stop when I think it's over or when I don't want to work anymore. So it's really nice. I can really choose.
And how many hours in a week are you working?
Quite a lot. I think I work something like 60 hours. It depends, yeah.
And how are you training around that? How are you managing to keep yourself fit?
So I work during 4 days. So during these 4 days, I do 12 hours a day. So then I try to run in the morning or in the evening. And then after these 4 days, I have 2 days rest. So during these 2 days, I really train on the bike, like long hours. And I really try to train.
I mean, it must be really disappointing having worked so hard, I guess, all winter for the season to not be able to use that form in races. But doing the work that you're doing, does that give you a different perspective on that? Do you feel that, you know, what you're doing is ultimately, you know, far more important?
Yeah, at first it was really difficult for me because I was really afraid to lose everything I worked for. So like all the shape I had and everything. But I think it's the same for everybody at the end. So at least now I can try to do something. So in my head, I'm really good. So I'm really motivated to when I come back from rock, I'm really motivated to train. And yeah, at least I try to do something during my day.
Well, so, yeah. I guess what you have is a great sense of purpose from what you're doing as well.
Yeah, yeah.
From the experiences you've had and seeing this patient up close and, you know, witnessed the scale of it, what's your advice to people, you know, perhaps people who maybe don't take it all that seriously? Do you have any advice for people?
I think at first, like, nobody took it really seriously. And even me, I didn't really took it seriously. But I think now people understand that it's really important to stay home and to, even with the bike, I think it's nice to stay home and train on the roller and not going outside, because yeah, at the hospital, like everywhere, it's full of people. And as a doctor, I think we really need to focus on the patients who have like the COVID or something really bad, and we can't take care of people that are going to train outside and have an accident and something. And for the cyclist, I think for now everybody is training on the rollers, and so it's the same for everybody. So we just have to be patient and it will come back.
And you mentioned at the start the World Championships in Switzerland and Egg in September. How confident are you that they will go ahead?
It's really hard to say, but for now I'm thinking that it will be there, and I train like it will be there, and we'll see. But for now I don't know, it's hard to say.
I guess cycling has assumed maybe slightly less importance for the moment.
Yeah, I think it's far less important, and even if one season is over, we can still ride the next season. The world is not over.
Thank you, Elise. That's great. Thank you very much for taking the time. And I think, you know, people will be, I don't know if it's the same in Switzerland, but here in the UK, people are very appreciative of and grateful to all the doctors and nurses. So I'm sure people listening to the podcast will feel the same as well.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot. It's really nice.
Thank you. And good luck. I hope we see you on a bike again soon as well.
Yeah, thanks. And okay. Good luck to everybody.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their support of the cycling podcast and the cycling podcast Femina. You can get 25% off your Science in Sport products at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. I also wanted to mention that Science in Sport are doing their bit during this coronavirus crisis. They've introduced complete meal solutions designed to ensure that key workers are fueled so they can continue their efforts. Science Support have also provided £100,000 of products to partner charities and hospitals across the UK. The complete meal solution, how that works is for every tub of complete meal solutions sold, Science Support will donate an extra tub on your behalf to their charity partners to help those in need. You can also choose to donate your purchase tub to those most in need at this challenging time. We will match that donation and donate the second tub. So go to scienceandsport.com for information on that as well. And thank you to Science and Sport.
Good on you, yeah. Science and Sport. Yeah, that's exactly. Wonderful.
Absolutely. So listen, in this final part of the cycling podcast Femina, actually before we get...
We're going to get dirty.
Before we do that, actually, just a quick mention.
You sound so clean saying that, Richard, by the way. We're going to get dirty.
Oh, come on. Don't change my accent. Mention for the latest episode of Inside the Peloton with Mitch Docker, which is on the Cycling Podcast feed now. The latest episode is an interview that Mitch has done with Ella Harris, who rides for Canyon SRAM and won the Zwift Academy a couple of years ago. So he thought it would be a great time to catch up with her and, given her history and her experience of using Zwift on the indoor trainer. That's a really interesting chat. They all are with Mitch. He's brilliant. So check out the latest Life in the Peloton with Mitch Docker on the Cycling Podcast feed. Now, what have we got in this part, Rose?
Well,
the big reveal.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, I'm going to let Molly talk more about it, but Molly Weaver, formerly of Team Sunweb and of Trek Drops, well, had planned this year to be a bit of a transition year, going from road racing to doing ultra endurance events. So, kind of a variety of different terrains, including a big gravel event that happens in Northumberland. I think it's Northumberland, called the Dirty Reaver. I feel like you have to say it with American. No, it's not an American event, but you have to say Dirty Reaver. That sounds...
With vocal fry.
Yeah.
As Reaver. Well. Yeah.
Obviously, that was meant to happen in April. That is obviously not happening anymore. That's been postponed till September. So, Molly, well, not exactly Molly, you'll find out more, decided to make an event of her own in her garden, or really technically her family home's garden. And it's... Well, I'll let her explain, but the amount of work that's gone into this before it even happens. Happening on the 18th of April, she's going to ride this, what should be, 130-kilometre gravel race in her garden. And in order to do this, it means actually buying gravel and putting the gravel down in the garden and knocking out massive concrete blocks. But I'll let her explain more.
This is inspired by the guy who ran the marathon on his balcony. That's where this all... So it's his fault, really. This all came from him. We'd just learned about this guy who ran the balcony marathon. And my dad then said, oh, someone should do something on their bike. And we were like, oh, yeah, but everyone's doing something on their turbo. Like, no one... You can't really do, like, a balcony marathon equivalent. Then he was like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if you rode the Dirty Reaver in the garden? And I was like, oh, that would be funny. Are we gonna call it the Dirty Weaver? And then it was funny for like a day. And then he like fully committed to it, somehow convinced me to commit to it. I then like publicly said I was doing it. Now I'm riding 130 kilometers in laps of my garden.
So really it's just a whole chain of men with bad ideas that has led you to this decision.
I think this was him wanting someone to do something funny and a bit ridiculous and it not be him. And he, you know, when like a parent especially can like suggest something and it seems like as they suggest it, you're like, yeah, that does sound amazing. And like, you think they would never like steer me wrong.
Yeah, surely. Come on, they brought you this far.
Yeah, they have my best interest. So I just thought this is going to be great. And in my head, like, it's not a big garden. But in my head, it was going to be like a kilometre a lap. I don't know why I thought that. So I was like, that's not even that bad. Like, it's like 130 laps. Like, that's not even that bad. Then I measured it and it was 100 metres. And I was like, oh, suddenly it's like thousands of laps. And it got less funny.
So at what point was it that you actually sat down and did that calculation? Like, how many days since making the big announcement that the Dirty Reaver will now be the Dirty Weaver in your back garden?
So we first discussed it when we thought it was like a kilometre. Then we just measured it like arbitrarily, like with a Garmin and like GPS, but that's quite inaccurate because it's like so small an area that it's not that accurate. And it was roughly 100 meters. Originally, I was going to do like the big Dirty Reaver, the 200 kilometer one, because we thought it was going to be a kilometer a lap. Then we sat down and thought, right, it has to be in daylight hours because let's not be like dangerous and stupid about it. So we did a lap and it took like 45 seconds to do a lap because it's really slow riding around your garden. Then we were like, okay, let's do the 130 kilometer one because that'll definitely be achievable.
Definitely.
So I'd already committed to that. Then I decided we should measure it formally. So I got an extension lead that was 10 metres because I didn't have a ruler and walked around my garden with an extension lead doing this lap. And it came out at 117, which is 1,111 laps. And that's when it became more daunting to me.
Yeah, that's a lot of laps. I just
it's
love that.
It's really a lot.
Yeah, I love the like the level, the professionalism. Like, everyone thinks of road cycling, they might think of like Ineos, you know, their really precise measurements. And here we have Molly Weaver with an extension lead that's probably about 10 metres.
Yeah, just on my own in the garden. Just
so good. Well, tell us a bit about the Dirty Reaver, what the actual Dirty Reaver is like and how you are creating those conditions in your garden.
So the actual Dirty Reaver, not having ever done it, because I was going to do it and I'm now not.
Yeah.
It's a gravel event, I'll call it. Some people race it. I was going to race it, but you can't just ride it. The longest one's 200 kilometres. Then there's the Dirty 130, which is what I'm doing, 130. Then I think there's a shorter one than that. And it's all on like gravel, like proper gravel roads, and not like forestry and stuff. Like, it's all on gravel. So we don't have, obviously, a gravel road, but the perimeter of the garden is gravel. Like, it's only going across a bit of grass because it's not actually a very big grass area. But then it goes across the drive and then, like, up against the fence line, we're creating a gravel, I'm going to say 70 metres, that's a random guess. So it's going to be...
How many extension leads is it? Is the big question.
It's about 7 extension leads.
So it's going to be, you are kind of getting the balance of terrains in there for this.
Yeah, at the moment, we're just trying to make it a quicker lap because it's so slow. Like, you think you would be able to do 100 metres quite quickly, but because it's, like, not made for riding on, you're like, into a corner, into a hedge, into like a bit of grass, onto the drive. Like, it's really slow.
So it'd be faster to run it, surely.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
So we're trying to like make it as easy as it can be. We want to get it so that I can do it in 12 hours and it be like achievable. It's pushing up against the 12-hour mark, and I've never actually ridden my bike for that long, so it's going to be a whole new world for me.
What about feed zones and, you know, have you got a mechanic backing you up?
Well, I'm going to refuse to do any mechanical work, because there has to be someone there for that, because I'm not going to be changing a puncture in the middle of this. This is pro setup. Like, I'm going to have, like, a team car, which is just my family car on the driveway. I'm thinking, like, spare bikes. I'm thinking there's going to be all kinds. We are going to have a feed zone, but obviously socially distanced from everyone because it's just me. So
yeah,
there won't be anyone feeding me. But and yeah, I think there's going to have to be breaks because I'm not going to be sitting on the saddle for 12 hours straight. But people are also wanting like live streams and stuff, but it's quite a challenge when you're just on your lonesome. So we'll see.
See, well, I mean, you some dedicated fans out there watching you for 12 hours.
I know, that is dedication.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to find some fun way. I mean, people want to watch the suffering, so...
Give the fans what they want, come on.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I'm also just picturing, because you have actually had to lay down gravel and things. I am just because I have actually met your mum, haven't I, at the women's tour last year. When I was there for the cycling podcast. And I can just imagine your mum just... like sighing quietly as she watches you ruin the family garden.
Yeah, when we started talking about like straightening corners, she was less into that idea.
Yeah.
But we forged ahead because this is important. I mean, she's put like, she went on long leave from work, which is like when you get some like time off work that's longer than normal, where she dedicated the whole time to doing the garden. And we're now like, being like, look, the Dirty Weaver is more important. You might have spent months of your life dedicated to this, but, you know, it's going to be ripped apart in front of your eyes.
But, yeah. I mean, it is an important cause. That you are raising money for Women's Aid, which is an incredibly important cause. Yeah. How did you choose Women's Aid to raise money for?
So when I first decided to do this, I was like, I'm not just going to do this for the sake of it, because, I mean, who has the motivation to do that? Not me. So I was like, I need to have something that's going to, like, make it worth it while I'm on, like, lap 700. But I personally couldn't think of a charity that I was like, yeah, that's the one, and I'm really like drawn to it. So I just asked people like, what do you think it should be for? And then someone suggested Women's Aid, and they sent me all the statistics and the figures around domestic abuse normally and how much worse it's going to be in lockdown and how nobody's talking about it and it's not getting any more support and it's kind of a hidden thing. And I just thought, actually, I feel like drawn to that, and it's like, yeah, it's something that I can put my heart into, and I can actually, like, yeah, I can feel some motivation from it. So I decided that was what I wanted to go for. And I'm glad I did. I think it's it's a really important one.
It was going to be a bit of an important year for you as well, having a bit of a fresh start and trying to move into doing more ultra endurance and having a mix of races. It must have been hard to have all of those events kind of disappear. But I mean, the good thing is I've seen that the Dirty Reaver has been postponed and is due to be back on in September, I guess.
Yes, I've had a few that have been cancelled and a few that have postponed, but nobody actually knows like what's going to happen. But I don't know, I kind of feel indifferent about it at this point. When it was the beginnings of all this and stuff was getting cancelled, I think everyone was a bit like, I trained all winter in all that crap weather and like I hated every second of it and now it's gone. Like I think there was that kind of initial like selfish feeling, but actually in the grand scheme of things, there's another next year, I can do them another time, and kind of there are more important things going on. So I kind of don't really feel anything towards it anymore. I think, yeah, what will happen will happen. And like events are making the right decisions and people are making the right decisions. And yeah, I agree with the fact they're being cancelled. So I can't then be bitter about it. So yeah, I'm pretty fine with it, really.
I mean, effectively, you'll have done the Dirty Weaver and the Dirty Reaver. There is a chance that you'll do both by the end of the year.
I could do the double.
The famous.
The only person ever.
The gravel monuments that are the Dirty Reaver and the Dirty Weaver.
Exactly.
Well, Molly Weaver there, what do we make of that?
Insanely brilliant. I love she's doing that. I love it.
I love that she's doing it and not me, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, well, for sure.
Don't envy it at all. But she is, I should mention again, actually, that she is raising money, fundraising for Women's Aid, which is particularly important now when domestic violence goes up, when, you know, people are isolated and in lockdown. So get on and make sure you support her, because we need more eyes watching to make sure that she actually does it. So donate some money.
That's true.
And that can be the weight on her back that forces her around that 100-metre loop, 1,000 and whatever times.
It's one of those things where you would do a loop, one loop, and it would be so easy. The effort would barely register. And in your head, you think, well, that was so easy that doing
I'll do it another 1,000
times is going to be absolutely fine. But yeah, it will get a bit, I mean, by sort of loop, probably by about 72, you're going to be on your knees, I would imagine.
And
it's like the worst version of the R record, you know?
A bit like the R record, but much longer.
Like the R record times 12, really, and on gravel.
Yeah, and you can imagine also, I mean, that Molly was also saying, not in the interview, but afterwards, said that actually they're trying to, her and her dad are trying to make it a bit faster, because effectively there is one bit of the course where you have to come to pretty much a complete standstill to get round the corner to, and then do another 100 meters.
That is going to get irritating, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's going to get irritating.
How many meters do you reckon would be around a lap of your garden, Richard? Can we set up some
I
sort of a similar challenge?
I've seen
these obstacle courses look quite considerable.
I would say 40 to 50.
40 to
right
50.
Round.
So you'd only need to do 2,000. Do you want to give it a go? Give it a wee shot.
No, you'd have to do more than that, because Molly's is 100 and yours is 40 to 50. So you'd have to do, 2,500 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Consider it, though.
Imagine your neighbours looking over the garden fence. What is that bloke still doing riding around his garden on a bike?
They shouldn't be leaning against the fence. They should be social distancing from the fence. They should not be encroaching on Richard's garden. That's for sure.
Well, this is where I feel quite grateful that I currently don't have a garden. So I can't even shame myself into doing anything similar. So I'm all right for now.
I'm going to keep quiet. Very quiet.
Well, good luck to Molly.
Best of luck to Molly.
Yes.
Good
luck to Molly. Hopefully by next podcast, she'll have recovered and, we can make sure that she definitely did it. 12 hours.
We say that, Rose. Not sure she will. But,
no.
We should say before next podcast, we're going to do something a little fun, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
We'll take a considerably less effort than Molly's.
Yes, but Molly's using her skill of riding bikes, and we're using our skill of just talking.
I'm going to bring you two into an Insta live when this episode goes out and have a little chat about well, whatever's been in the episode, but also just bringing people into the discussion with us. People can ask questions, join in our conversation, and have a bit of fun. So I'm not sure
when are we going to aim to do this? Will we announce on social media when it'll be?
Yeah, we'll announce on social media.
One night next week?
We'll maybe do it, I guess, the night after the podcast goes out or something. Give people a chance to have a listen and ask us any questions. But you can ask questions about anything, anything, like best footwear in the lockdown or best bedroom obstacle course or something.
My gosh.
Richard's
wow.
Being, I meant for kids. I meant I'm doing obstacle courses in my kids' bedroom for them every now and again.
Great cover.
Although it's going to be a late night recording. We can do what we like, people. It's sponsor free. We're not obliged to anybody. We can have a bit of fun. We'll do our own dirty.
I'm not telling anyone about my bedroom obstacle course.
Oh my god.
Thank you very much.
Thank goodness for that, eh?
It might be time to wrap it up there. I think it might be, folks.
But yeah, see you all in Insta Live then.
Well, yeah, and next month I mentioned we'll hear more from Louis De La Haya, and we might do something a little bit different next month, assuming that we're still in this lockdown state. So listen out for that. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Rose.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks, Orla.
Stay safe.
And you guys.
And Orla, thank you very much.
Thank you both. Stay safe and stay back.